Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
We would like to acknowledge that this podcast meeting is being held on Aboriginal land, the land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, and we would like to pay respect to their elders past, present and emerging, and their multiple birth parents of children with disabilities. And this week we're talking to Professor Sonia Graver, Head of Gynaecology at the Royal Children's Hospital.
This podcast contains truth, laughter and the occasional F word, so it's not suitable for children, so you might want to put your headphones, earbuds or pods or whatever in. Hello, Mandy.
Hello, Kate.
Oh, it's a beautiful sunny day in Melbourne.
I know.
You know,
I'm wearing my dress for the last time, I think.
Yeah, you
although,
reckon?
Yeah, we're in the lead up to Easter today.
Yes.
So who knows what the weather's going to be
like. Yeah, by the time this podcast comes out, it could be snowing. We don't know. Melbourne, we love you and we love your crazy weather.
So today we're very excited to have this special guest.
We're really excited.
Really, because I think the P Tribe really want to hear from her. And this is the kind of stuff that we're not going to share because we're not going to talk about our children and their teenage years. Or anything that's
general.
Private.
Yeah.
So we want to hear from the best of the best. So would you like to say hello?
I would like to say hello to everyone. But everyone knows me as Sonia. So you're please call me Sonia as well.
Sonia, we will. Thank you for giving us your time, Sonia.
Yes,
you've had
thank
clinic
you.
This morning, so you're a busy person.
Yes. If I wasn't busy, what would I do with myself?
Well,
so,
I know.
Yep, happy to be busy.
That's
yep,
true.
I agree. I like being
me
busy.
Me too.
Yep.
Well, Kate, do you want to start off with our first question?
Okay, yes. So the first question we want to ask is, do you have any music or a band that either gets you through good times or helps you through the bad times?
Look, if I am really stressed and really under pressure, the most calming thing I can do is listen to some, you know, old classical Bach music or cello Bach music. You know, I used to pretend I could play the cello, so cello music. that lets me disconnect from the chaos and stress.
Yes, I can
it
imagine.
Really does, doesn't it?
Yeah, an instrumental. You're not having to put up with words and
Just
soak in beautiful classical music. Thank you. Okay, we think you're going to say yes to this, but did you win any awards at school?
I think I came top of grade 6.
That's pretty good.
I can't remember anything else beyond that.
I know, we don't really.
Such a big deal at the time and then...
Yeah, but top of grade 6, that's
top
pretty
grade
good.
Six,
do you think they were like, this girl is headed towards professorship?
I doubt it. Yes. I never had any idea I was going to end up where I've ended up.
Right.
I've meandered this path and I've enjoyed what I've done as I've walked along this path and lo and behold, this is where I've ended up doing stuff I love.
Well,
And why are you a P or a P-fessional?
Why are you a part of our tribe?
Yeah.
Look, my training as a clinician was as an obstetrician gynecologist, and then I got asked to fill in for the professor here at the Children's Hospital, I turned what was an incredibly small, tiny clinic into an amazingly busy gynecology clinic seeing all sorts of diverse problems. And, you know, was it because I'm a woman, that I bought a different approach to care that wasn't being provided before. But anyway,
probably.
Yes, I can believe that.
So it just grew from a minuscule clinic and, you know, with me having had minimal training, but about the same time I actually started having my own kids.
Right.
So there was lots I was learning from my own kids as I was learning more about young people.
Yep.
And, yeah, it grew and I loved it, and that's where I've ended up here.
And so how long ago was that?
You're trying to ask me how old
I am. No, I'm not.
So I've been working at the Children's Hospital for 30 years.
Oh, wow. That's fantastic.
Oh, well, you must have seen some huge changes.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, enormous changes. Yeah. Enormous changes.
In so many ways.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially
in your department.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's very true, because there was lots of things that people just didn't talk about. Mm. And, you know, there are all sorts of issues that just never got raised. And, you know, as a gynecologist talking about bodies and girls' bits and genitals and periods and sex and tampons and all that sort of stuff is bread and butter for me. But, you know, if you've been trained as a pediatrician or a pediatric surgeon or an orthopedic pediatric person, you know, that they're not comfort zones for you, whereas that's all comfort zones, easy territory for me, and yet it was a completely untouched territory.
Yeah,
you know,
amazing.
People did not really, you know, they may have had puberty, they may have had help going through puberty if you needed help going through puberty, but that's not quite the same as talking about periods and sex and tampons stuff.
It's really not. And I think, I mean, I am 48, nearly 49, and even when I grew up, most of, like, I just got it from my peers. My mum was very open, but I didn't really want to go to and ask her about certain elements of sex or sex education, and also she didn't have the period pain that I had.
Yeah.
So then, you know, you can't just have one person.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah. So.
And it's opening out those conversations. So, you know, you've come with irregular periods, but, you know, I'm going to talk about, so what else happens at periods time? And you just, you know, build it from there. And then, you know, young people whose bodies are different either because they've had surgery or because, you know, for whatever reason, then, you know, how does that impact on life? You know, and I want to know whether it stops them visiting friends' places because they've got bladder issues or bowel issues, or because they're embarrassed because there's scars on their tummy, or, you know. And so how does that impact on your life and your interactions with friends and colleagues, school friends, doing sleepovers, going to camp, you know. And so it just one thing takes you into the next thing.
And so important. Getting back to you taking over from the man, there's a fun story in the podcast that I took my daughter Molly to the Royal Children's and saw a gynecologist there. And as we left, she said, "Why is it called a gynecologist? It should be called a gynecologist." And I was like, "You are right."
Although we have to be a little bit careful there, because we actually see quite a number of trans kids.
Yes, well, we were going to talk to you about that. That's right.
So, yes, you probably couldn't call us a girl.
No. But she was 14 and she has an intellectual disability, so it was very cute.
Very fast.
Yes, and it was lovely to go into that appointment and be able to talk our truth. And the gynecologist said, "Oh, you're missing school. This is not on anymore." And I was just so thrilled to hear that, because it was something I was trying to manage with her. And it becomes such a big deal every month.
I always say I've got two sayings. One of them, or two rules in life. One, be sensible. That probably covers quite a few things. And the second one is, periods are not allowed to mess up any young person's life.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, whether it's vomiting or feeling faint with your periods, getting seizures with your periods, whether it's heavy, whether it's painful. I don't care what it is. If it's mess or it's, you know, your mood crashes and you get depressed or aggro or whatever, if it's messing up your life, then it's time for us to do something about it.
And I actually never thought that was even possible. Like I grew up and sadly gave this to one of my kids where every time I got my period or I ovulated, I'd have a migraine for two or 3 days. So I just factored that into my life. I didn't know what to do about it. I'd end up in the hospital on a drip and then I'd come home and go back to school. Nobody ever said, oh, we can do something about this. And then when it happened to my daughter when she was, you know, 12, 13, and by the time she got to year 11, I thought she's actually not going to be able to complete school because it's, you know, she's having so much time off. And we really, I never thought of coming into the Royal Children's. We really had to go through the ringer to get some treatment for her and try so many things. It was just wasting her time until we found something that worked. But it just never, ever crossed my mind that it's could be something that we just said, no, this isn't acceptable.
Yeah.
Like no doctor ever said that to her.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting challenge. You know, we were actually talking a group of paediatric adolescent gynecologists this morning were talking on exactly that issue. Because what level is it the education needs to reach? You know, clearly it needs to reach you as parent.
Yes.
It needs to reach the GPs.
Yes.
So that they shift that mindset from saying, you know, you'll grow out of it or, you know, it's just period pain or it's just period, you know, sorry, it's, you know, it's related to your period cycle. Or is it directed at the young people? And, you know, really it's multi-leveled that, you know, people have to change their attitude. It is not acceptable for women to be losing a whole chunk of their lives because of something that's occurring cyclically. You know, if we take you back 100 years ago, you'd have been pregnant or breastfeeding most of the time. And so you would have missed out on your ovulation pain. You would have missed out on your period migraines. And you would, you know, mind you, you'd have been at risk of dying with childbirth.
Yes.
Just, you know.
But you wouldn't have had nearly as many episodes because you would have been pregnant or breastfeeding most of the time.
Yes.
And so when people say to us, but it's not natural to not have periods, and I'm sorry, it's not natural to only have one or two children.
Yes, that's true.
Right.
And it's not natural to have 100 periods in your lifetime or 300 periods in your lifetime. Nature would have had us having 40 in our lifetime.
Interesting. With our listeners, there's people that have small children with disabilities and additional needs. There's people in their teenage years and there's people that have adults or there's adults with disabilities listening. What are some of the things that you can impart your wisdom to our people that are listening that to give them some information on where they can go to get some help?
So I think if we go back to what we were just saying before, that much as we need to do the education to clinicians, I think for people themselves to appreciate or parents to appreciate that there are things that can be done. So if we're talking about menstrually related things, that as your child is beginning to go through pubertal changes and you're seeing things changing, then I would suggest keeping a bit of a diary and keeping track of it in the sense that, you know, one young woman who taught me a lot, she had had probably 4 or 5 admissions to the children's hospital with severe vomiting and she would be in hospital for 5 or 6 or 7 days with a drip and every anti-vomiting medication and then she'd get better and she'd go home. And then she'd come back in 4 or 5 weeks later. And the mum said, look, it's happening every 4 to 5 weeks. And she seems to get acne before each episode. Now, this girl did not yet have periods. But mum noted that her skin was also getting greasy and acne, and then the vomiting would start and then they'd be in hospital. And so I said, and mum insisted on, surely this is hormonal. And so this young girl came to see me and I said, well, look, it could be because we know that 40% of teenagers with their, if they're getting period pain, will get nausea, and we know that 30% may vomit and or get diarrhea. Mm. And so, look, it could be this cycling beginning to happen. Why don't you give us some not Clonstan or Nurofen, you know, non-steroidal, when you see the pimples appear?
Mm.
And so mum did that next month and it didn't happen.
Oh.
That might have been random luck.
Yeah.
So the next, you know, 4 or 5 weeks after that, mum was a bit late in getting the non-steroidal medications in, and so that they were vomited up. And so she took the young girl into the emergency department and they rung me and I said, give her a non-steroidal suppository.
Mm.
And she went home from the emergency department.
Wow. Wow.
So that was a mother observing skin changes plus a symptom occurring. Mm. Now, I'm not saying that I want to own everything that happens with teenagers, because teenagers are allowed to get grumpy and moody and difficult.
Yep.
But, you know, if seizures are beginning to happen, or, you know, they're getting nauseous or getting diarrhea, but it happens every 4 to 6 or 8 weeks, remembering that the cycle can be irregular when first starting out, and just make note of that clustering. You know, there are young women who, or girls who, you know, maybe had seizures when they were little, and then they seem to have grown out of it, or everything was very stable, and then all of a sudden breasts are beginning and seizures are completely out of control. But they're out of control for 1 week in every 4 to 6 weeks. I'm sorry, I'll own that.
Yep. Wow.
And so it's looking for cyclic things. And so for parents of young girls to be looking for cyclic things as hormones are beginning to kick in is the clue to say, I want to see a pediatric adolescent gynecologist.
Yes.
Now, there are increasing numbers of us around Australia, so that now there's somebody providing adolescent gynae services in every state territory of Australia.
Oh, great.
And certainly in Victoria, we've got somebody down at Frankston, somebody in Sunshine, and us here at the Children's. And the people who work in Frankston and Sunshine also work with us here.
Yes.
So, and sorry, in Monash. So, you know, it's a growing recognised subspecialty of gynaecology. Have we got the message through to all our gynecology adult colleagues? And the answer is no, not yet. Yeah. We're working on it. We're trying. So clearly we've got much more work to do at an educational level amongst specialists, and we've got much more work to do amongst GPs, but we do as much as we can.
Oh, yeah.
And then, of course, paediatricians as well. We're trying to get the message through to them, and you know, increasingly they're recognising it.
Yes, yes. Well, that's how I got to you.
Yeah, and I think this is me as a non-doctor. It's so great when you don't know what to do with something and you can just palm it off to somebody else. And I don't mean palm it off, but like, oh, let's send them to that person.
Yes, yes.
Because you do know. I love it when there's someone that knows more than me. So all those doctors can go, here, off you go.
Yeah, that's right.
But your diary keeping and keeping track is really, really, really important. Mm. And so that extends then to parents, but then it begins to extend to the teenagers and to the adult women to just recognise, oh, hang on a second, this cluster of things is happening together. And it's a cluster that enables us to say, well, and, you know, it's also, if I'm going to start trying to do something to help, then I want to know, well, am I fixing all of your problems, or which ones am I fixing, which, you know, how much harder do I have to work to solve the problems? Mm.
For me, with a daughter with a hemiplegia and an intellectual disability, when she got her period, I was just thrown into how is she going to undo the pads? How is she going to manage all of that stuff? Mm. So we bought the book from the Children's, a special book for special girls. So we definitely read that together. I just think they need to do an update and add some period undies in there.
Yeah, so they do probably need to update that book, because when that book was written a few years ago, period undies did not exist.
That's right. And
clearly, you know, they're great value and have made, you know, the life much easier for many, many young women.
Oh, life-changing. But even just the book is awesome. There's pictures of blood. Mm. There's pictures of pubic hair. There's all that sort of really basic stuff because I was really thrown when that happened. And even though I knew it was coming.
Yeah.
But it was confronting as a mum, I suppose, then thinking, well, now it's up to me. I've got to go and buy all the pads again and how's she going to manage this?
Mm.
Yeah.
But I think period undies, like I use them.
Yeah.
Like I just think, and my children, the neurotypical use them, and I just love the fact that there's this new generation coming up that just, why would you have used a pad?
Yeah.
Like all those years of us hiding them, going to the toilet.
Putting them in the brown paper bag. Oh. Mum would give me the massive pad. Oh, dear.
No, period undies are the best. And I know Modi Body has adaptable ones, so yes. They've got sides that open and, oh, game changers.
Yep, definitely game changers.
Mm.
Although, you know, it is very interesting and it may not quite apply to this cohort of young women, but it's been fascinating to see the young women who've chosen to use menstrual cups.
Yes, oh, yes. I was going to ask you about that too. Yeah.
My daughters do that as well.
And, you know, some of them are doing it for green reasons,
yes.
You know, because – but. In the same way as Modi Bodies can be, you know, those period undies can be washed, you know, rather than all this throwaway stuff. Mm. It's a great idea.
Oh, yeah.
I was going to say, we've got a new puppy and she went running up the hall the other day and my daughter, who we call number one daughter, is like tearing after her. I'm like, what? She's got my menstrual cup.
The puppy.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, how funny. Oh.
Anyway.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Can you tell our people what are some of the things you can do to help adolescents with disabilities and additional needs? What are some of the things that you can suggest or do for our kids?
From a period perspective, really the issues are very similar to anyone else.
Mm.
You know, period pain is period pain is period pain.
Yeah.
And, you know, starting point is non-steroidal medications are much better than paracetamol.
Yep. Yep.
Now, if that's not working or it's not enough and in the context of heavy periods, then there are medications called tranexamic acid, which makes bleeding less.
Right.
Now, those tablets, I admit, are quite big, but there's no reason why they can't be crushed. I gather they're a bit bitter in taste, so there's nothing stopping you from putting it with honey.
Right. Yeah.
So making periods lighter can often make them more manageable and they can often make them less painful.
Mm.
Now, if you've... And trying to be active and things like hot water bottles, you know, hot water bottles do.
They do. That's right.
An effective role.
Yes.
But if somebody is still missing school and missing activities, then I think we're allowed to move on to what's our next range of options after we've thought about those lifestyle things and those simple approaches.
Mm.
And it does mean that our next line is to think about hormonal things.
Mm.
And certainly if I'm also thinking about somebody who's getting seizures on a cyclic basis, then I am going to be thinking, and sure, you can add another anticonvulsant, but, you know, sometimes using a hormonal way has fewer side effects and I also mean she can go swimming more often because she's not having a period.
Yes.
And, you know, I've heard people grumble and say that, you know, we shouldn't be using things to fix periods And we certainly shouldn't use hormonal things to skip periods. Mm. And I'm thinking, well, I'm sorry, if you were the state champion swimmer, nobody would stop you from taking the pill and skipping your periods.
No.
Well, if it's good enough for a state champion swimmer to skip her periods, it is good enough for anyone.
Yep.
And, you know, don't tell me that you have to experience your periods to be allowed to experience what being a woman's about.
No.
You know, being a woman is not about suffering in pain.
No.
Being a woman is getting on and doing all the wonderful things
that,
you know, we want to do. And so there are people out there who say it's natural.
Yep.
I'm sorry, it's natural to have 15 kids and breastfeed them all.
And that's
not
right.
Have periods.
It's so true.
So often the next line beyond the simple approaches we've already mentioned, so lifestyle things, hot water bottles, non-steroidals, making periods lighter with tranexamic acid, then we're starting to think about hormonal things. And people say, well, you can get side effects. Yes, that's true, you can get side effects. But tell me, when you walk down the shampoo aisle and you choose a shampoo, can you promise to me that the first shampoo in the nicest coloured bottle or with the nicest smell or the nicest name, whether that's going to make your hair frizzy or whether it's not actually going to do the job or your hair feels really dry afterwards? Or so when you try a shampoo and you think, oh, yuck, I don't like this one, what do?
You go back to get another one.
So if a pill does not suit, now what do I mean by not suit? Well, it might mean that it's not fixing the periods well enough. Remember that all pill doses are the lowest possible level of hormones to stop a pregnancy.
Right.
Which is fine, but if I'm actually fixing a problem, then I might need a slightly higher dose, you know. Not all diabetics have the same dose of insulin.
Yeah.
Not all people with seizures have the same dose of anticonvulsants.
True.
So not all people who need period problems fixed are going to need the same dose.
Mm.
So if I'm not fixing the problem, then maybe I have to try something else. If I'm causing splitting headaches, then I have to stop and reconsider and change my approach. If I'm making somebody grumpy or sad or more anxious, that I'm on the wrong pill and I've got to swap pills.
Mm.
So it's a trial and error basis, just like choosing your shampoo. And also don't forget with your shampoo, you might use it successfully for a few years and then decide, oh, it actually doesn't suit my hair any longer.
Yeah.
Now, is that because they change the shampoo or has your hair changed?
Yeah,
so
interesting.
Certainly our bodies change with time, and sometimes people are on the same pill for 20 years, but sometimes people after 5 years say, you know what, I don't feel right and I want to try something.
Mm.
Well, that's fine. So pills often a next step. People who are on anticonvulsants often need to be on a slightly stronger pill because the anticonvulsants make their liver chew up the pill faster.
Right.
And so you need a slightly higher dose. Now, if we're not winning or it's too difficult to get the tablets in, then we might well talk about a Mirena. So that's the hormonal thing inside the uterus.
Mm-hmm. I got one of them.
Sorry?
I love it. I've got one.
there's a lot of people with them. I think I would dare to say that probably half the female obs and gynae people around town have got them in. You know, they're very effective for the majority of people. There's always somebody,
of course,
something doesn't suit.
Mm.
So Mirenas are great if getting tablets in every day or remembering to take tablets every day is a problem. The Mirena is going to stop the period. It's going to do the things that are related to the uterus. So it's going to vastly reduce the bleeding. It doesn't guarantee no bleeding, but it's vastly less bleeding. And it, for most people, is very effective at reducing period-related pain.
Mm.
Now, it's probably not as good if you're getting seizures with your periods, because that's probably coming from your ovary hormones rather than from the uterus that's driving that. So we do have to think about what's the problem we're trying to fix.
Okay, interesting.
Now, another long-acting thing that people sometimes wonder about is the implanon, the thing, the rod that goes in your arm. 10% of women with an implanon have no bleeding. But that leaves 90% with bleeding. And for 30 to 40%, that means irregular bleeding. And for many people with a disability, the irregularity is actually more problem. And the remaining 50% still have periods that might be a bit lighter but are actually much the same. So Implanon's not my choice for fixing a period problem. Great contraception, not arguing with that, but not a period problem fixer. And then there's Depo. And Depo Provera, the injection every, you know, 10 to 13 weeks is in some women really good. So, again, if the young person can't stand needles, then it's not a great idea. And I personally would usually start somebody on the tablets and do that for 2 or 3 weeks to make sure that they haven't got side effects, because if I give them an injection, they've got it for the next 3 months, and if they don't like it, then I'm a bad person. And I don't like being responsible for a problem for 3 months.
Whereas if you want to be the hero,
tablets,
with the Mirena, so I would. Do you do that under an anaesthetic?
Yeah, we do that under an anaesthetic for young people. And you know, what's my lower limit? Well, if you're having periods, then that tells me your uterus is a reasonable size. So if somebody's menstruating, we can put in a Mirena under anaesthetic. And we've been doing that for 20 years. We've been using Mirenas here at the Children's Hospital. And we've done follow-up studies looking at the impact of Mirenas, and particularly in the population of young women with disabilities. And, you know, people, we were actually thrilled with the responses, because, you know, 95% reported they were very, very happy with them. But the comments, we got some sort of extra spontaneous comments that were, it's added dignity to my daughter. You know, it's just meant fewer carers have to be involved in, you know, changing menstrual pads and stuff. And so I hadn't been expecting that comment, and it was just lovely, lovely to hear that we were adding dignity.
Oh, that just makes me want to cry.
Yeah, beautiful. Oh, beautiful.
Goodness.
And dignity, giving people the chance to have dignity is something that we obviously all want to do to young people.
That's
so,
right.
You know, wonderful.
Just amazing, the Mirena, I reckon, because you can, if you've want to have a baby, you can whip it out and then you can get pregnant and then you can pop it back in at your 6 week checkup and you know. I've been having them for 20 years, I reckon. I love it. And I've had 3 kids in the time that I've had them. So
Oh, that was an excellent explanation. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And we have lots of lovely parents listening whose children are transgender. And so they come through your clinic too?
Yes, many of them do. We've tried to teach the main gender team the basics on fixing period related problems, because having periods for somebody who's a trans man is can be very traumatic. So and using estrogen is clearly not something they're comfortable with, but we can usually stop periods with just straight progesterone. And, you know, occasionally we put Mirenas in that population as well. So there are a number of different things that we can do to make sure that periods are not an issue. But then we also see the trans people who have pain issues And we also have discussions with many of them about fertility related issues, because there's questions which we can answer and reassure people about with regard to some of the medications they're going to use.
Yes.
You know, if you go on the puberty blockers, they're completely reversible, so not fussed about them, but people feel anxious.
Yeah.
So we can reassure them. And then, you know, what's the effect of testosterone on ovaries? You know, can you stop testosterone and then carry a pregnancy? Release an egg, and the answer is yes. It's been done, you know, numerous times now. There've been trans men who've carried pregnancies.
Yeah. Wow.
Trans men need to be careful that they need contraception still, because testosterone's not guaranteed to be contraceptive.
Right.
And likewise, you know, if somebody's been on estrogen, if they stop the estrogen, you know, testes will wake up again.
Okay.
So, yeah, so they're the sorts of conversations we're having with the trans population, as well as talking about sexuality and the different ways that one can enjoy sexual relationships.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's no rules about how we can, the different ways that we can enjoy our sexuality and who we have sex with, as long as it's in a positive relationship, is really what, you know, we all want.
Yep.
People to be having positive relationships not abusive relationships.
Yes, exactly.
You've got a very interesting job.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting job. I have been known to say, you know, why do a boring job when you can do an interesting one?
That's so true. I could be at home doing the washing, so here I am.
And how many gynecologists do you have at the Royal Children's?
We've trained people now who are in Malaysia. We've trained people who are now in Canada. There are five of us at the moment here. Somebody out also in some, you know, we've got one or two off on maternity leave at the moment.
Right.
Who are about to come back. And
right.
So.
And what about on a world scale? How do you work with other hospitals? Do you talk to other professors in a similar position as you?
Well, up until a year or so ago, I was actually president of the World Pediatric Adolescent Gynecology Federation.
Kate and I have our mouth open. We think that's an award.
Yeah, I think that's an award.
President of the world.
Yeah. And then, I'm even more proud of the fact that we ran, for the first time, Australia actually ran the World Congress, which in pediatric and adolescent gynae, which only happens every 3 years. That was held in Melbourne the end of 2019, just before all the COVID
started. Oh, yes.
And, you know, it was an absolutely fantastic, you know, the team of people who helped put this together, and we just had a really good, really, really good Congress. And one of the things that we did, which we'd been really determined to do right from the word go on, that was we wanted young people, young women, to be part of the Congress. And so we had somebody who's born without a uterus talking at the Congress. We had a 12, 13-year-old doing one of the opening addresses about the impact of climate change her, and why it was so important for us as, you know, clinicians, doctors, thinking about young people to be thinking about climate change. So we made it, you know, we weren't just interested in talking about uncommon conditions in an ivory tower manner. We were really keen to make this a, you know, arms open to the world and to all the issues confronting young people, and to have them as part of the Congress. So it was, you know, it was a fantastic event.
That sounds so impressive.
Yeah, it really does. And to have, I think for so long, and I know we're talking about a while ago, but women weren't even allowed to be involved in the conversation about women's health. And, you know, like I said, I'm a middle-aged woman, but I remember when I had my first children, there were very few female gynaes.
Yeah.
They were all men.
Yep.
And the how that's flipped in the time, you know, my lifetime.
Yes, absolutely.
My mum loves to tell the story of when she was pregnant with me, so 1976, and the doctor called her the wrong name all the time, and she just said, okay. She was 21, you know, and there's just this man at Box Hill Hospital, and he just kept calling her the wrong name. And she just said, okay, well, she didn't know that she could say, excuse me, you're calling me the wrong name.
I know, because such pedestals the specialist was. Yes. And, I mean, fair enough, they've done a lot of study, but still they're people.
Yeah.
I remember when I called my gynecologist by his first name and my mum was like, what do you mean? It's like, well, that's what he introduced himself as.
Absolutely. And as I said at the beginning, you know, if you call me anything else, I'll be looking over my shoulder wondering who you're talking to. You know, everyone calls me by my first name. And, you know, although it's interesting when I'm working with, or I go to Malaysia sometimes or other places to do a bit of work, and, you know, they really struggle to, you know, even the gynecologists who work with me, who I've known for 10 years now, you know, they still want to have formality.
Yes. I understand that. It's like when you finish school and the teacher's like, call me Bob, and you're like, no.
Or an uncle.
Yes, call me by my first name. Like, no, that's not who you are. I get it.
What do you think is in the future for gynecology? Is there things that we don't know that people are talking about, or?
There's an interesting issue that's grumbling around in the background, which I think is an area where there's going to be significant change, and it does relate to the period pain question. And the analogy and so many young women feel that if they happen to mention to someone, their GP, or that they've got period pain, the chances that they'll be told, you know, they're there, you'll grow out of it, you know, put up with it. That's what periods are like. And then, you know, 8-10 years later, they end up with a laparoscopy and they're told they've got a spot of endometriosis. But the problem with that is that all the evidence says that if I took 10 women who had identical pain histories and I laparoscoped, so I stuck a telescope inside and had a look, that 3 or 5 or maybe up to 5 of them would have a few spots of endometriosis. Wow. So I'm going to tell them, oh, you poor soul, you've got endometriosis. That's dreadful. That was the cause of all your pain. And what am I supposed to tell the other 5?
Yeah.
Get lost, you're making it up?
Yeah.
Given that their stories were identical.
Yes.
And if you follow if you follow all of those women and ask what happens in the long term, we know that women who have endometriosis and even have it all chopped out, that in 6, 12, 18 months' time, they're going to have their pain back again, and then they might be having a second laparoscopy. And so there are women who've had 10 and, dare I say, 15 laparoscopies, really what they needed was treatment, management of their pain and not another operation. So for me, I think one of the really challenging areas is, again, getting that message through that, you know, we don't have to put up with pain. We have to manage it better, but we have to manage the symptoms. We don't need an operation. And one of the problems is, you know, if you told me now you had a headache, I'd just say, go and take some Panadol.
Yeah.
Now, it could be a splitting headache, but the attitude towards a headache is take some Panadol.
Yeah.
Now, if you told me that you had a migraine, I'd say, oh, do you need a medical certificate? Have you got some anti-vomiting stuff? Do you want me to turn the lights off? Do you need a day off work?
Yes.
So they're both horrible headaches, but one of them has earned you a whole mountain of sympathy, and the other one's, oh, take some Panadol. And I think we do that with period pain, say, oh, go and take some Nurofen. And endometriosis, we say, oh, my God, you poor soul.
Yeah.
Whereas it's not the endometriosis, it's the symptoms that need treating. Oh, and we know that in fact, if you chop off the tiny wee, you know, they can be the size of a grain of sand. You know, if you chop that off, it's not the solution. And you know, there are enough studies to tell us that it's not the solution. And yet, you know, there's like a freeway that's heading towards surgery. And it's a bit like how we've changed our attitude to, you know, arthroscopies, having a look inside joints and washing them out. And now everyone's saying, well, you know, if you actually went to the physiotherapist, you'd be as good and you need to have the operation.
Right.
And so gynecologists are a little bit behind in terms of that road. And so if you're asking me to look into the future in gynecology, I'm hoping that in 5 years' time we'll be offering women who are suffering in pain better care and not just offering them an operation.
Right, yeah.
We know that of women who present, you know, I've done studies both way rounds, looking at the symptoms but also looking at of women who have endometriosis found, how did they present? And less than half of them presented with any pain. Half of them presented with infertility and half, you know, some.
Yes.
So it's not pain. You know, don't tell me because you've got horrible pain that therefore you need an operation. You're telling me you've got horrible pain, you need me to fix your pain.
Yes.
You don't need me to necessarily, because the study we've just done at Mercy, 30% of women who had a laparoscopy at 2 years actually had worse pain after their surgery.
Oh no.
You're asking me somebody who's interested in young women, somebody who's interested in ensuring that young women are healthy into the future and that their fertility into the future, and I have an interest in pain. So you ask me the question, where are we going to be in 5 years' time? I have my fingers crossed that we'll be managing young women's pain and menstrual symptoms better than we do at the moment.
Oh, that's amazing.
I suppose the question that's in my mind is, what about our nonverbal women?
Amongst our, you know, I think the same principle applies, and if a nonverbal woman is clearly distressed, less able, you know, offer food, you know, whatever the symptoms, whatever the problem, we can still interpret that something is not happening.
Yes.
That's, you know, it's not as good at that time. And
yes.
if that's with her menstrual cycle or it's halfway between her periods, then I'm sorry, that's a problem I should be fixing.
Uh-huh. Yeah, beautiful.
Excellent.
And if she's got really heavy periods, I mean, you know, having really heavy periods, you know, women that are iron deficient, you know, they need to have that fixed, because if you're iron deficient, you're tired and you're more headachy and you've got energy.
Right.
I'm sorry. We've got too much to do in our life be running
below par. It's true, Sonia.
Yeah, all of us.
Preach it.
Yes. So true.
Well, we could talk to you forever. And you probably really could. You probably have your own podcast.
Yes.
I did hear you were on the Royal Children's Hospital podcast. I listened to that episode.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Yes. No, we should do some more. We did do a few Facebook Lives a few years ago, and you know, I happily talk about this stuff, as you can tell.
Yeah, I love it. Is there anything we've missed that you would love to tell our tribe of people?
No, you've probably heard enough from me today, but they're allowed to let you know if there's something else we need to cover.
Okay, great.
Come back again.
Okay, all right.
They will do that.
They
will let us
definitely.
Know.
Definitely.
And the more conversation, the better.
Yes, that's right, because I felt lonely being a mum with a teenage daughter with multiple disabilities, and now I don't feel like that anymore. I feel like, oh, these are my people.
Yep.
And I can go to them.
Yep.
And then that boost of encouragement carries on in my parenting to my daughter. It's given us empowerment.
Well, just the thought that you shouldn't be missing any activities.
No, like, just to be told that. Why? You shouldn't be missing school. And I was like, oh, my gosh.
I know.
No.
It was almost like a, you know, and no offence to people who do this, but when they give birth and they don't want any pain relief, like this rite of passage. And I'm like, no, give me the pain relief because that's what it's for.
Well, there's
for.
A whole.
The same with your period.
But, I mean, that it is interesting, isn't it? But, you know, some people are lucky and they labour is not as painful.
That's right.
If you have horrible, horrible, horrible pain and you're exhausted at the other end of all of that, then your capacity to breastfeed and you're exhausted and your breastfeeding's down and now you've got more problems.
Yes.
So, you know, we should be helping people rather than putting barriers in.
Definitely. Yes. And for our girls with physical disabilities And oh, there's so many lists. They've already got enough.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You just want to go to school without worrying about that.
Yeah, that's right. Anyway.
Oh, you've been amazing.
Oh, Sonia, we love you. Thank you for giving up your time.
Thank you.
The P Tribe are going to love you. Watch out. You're going to have a lot of referrals.
But more topics to chat
yes,
about.
Yes, no, we'll find out.
Happy. Oh, we'll find out, definitely. Yep. Don't you worry.
Yep.
Thank you so much. Okay, you. See you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Sonia. See you.
Bye.
Hey, Peas, it's Kate here, and there's no Mandy. And that is because we are saving our voices this week and we're not doing a cry laugh difference. Because we are recording our audiobook. So we thought that we should give our best voices to the audiobook. And you might be able to hear that mine's a little bit croaky. So we've had a big couple of weeks doing our live shows. And thank you to everybody who came. I also want to say, please rate and review. It helps us get up the charts and it makes such a difference to us and to everybody else who hasn't listened yet. They'll see us. And the booklet is out in the wild. If you came to the live shows, you've seen it. Some pediatricians have already picked it up. So that supporter money is going towards something really, really, really important now. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. We'll be back with a cry laugh difference real soon. And that's all. Bye. Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.